There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Hi, hello there.
Hello.
It seems you've fallen into the gap. My name is, Jeff, yeah. That's a good fake name, yeah.
Yeah, you sound like Carl Panzer.
No.
You're not.
How fucking dare you say something like that?
You're angry.
Come here. Let me put you in a nice fun outfit. See, we got these new suits. You can wear them with shorts.
What kind of public access show is this?
It's fashionable for the summertime. For the businessman who needs to take Subway. You need to go and make sure it needs to fit a little tighter than you think it would be. Just like this.
What did you say your name was?
Jeff.
Okay.
You notice
the cameras aren't plugged in, you know that, and I am the janitor.
Very convincingly and very conveniently, we've also put a zipper in the back of these pants. It's more of a formality.
All right, I see what you're doing. Good Lord. Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. This is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hey.
And we got Henry Zabrowski here as well.
I just wish my mom named me Snarl.
Well, Snarl would be a good name for Mr. Panzram, and that's who we're talking about. Part two, Carl Panzram. We're going to get into his prison experience, the hardening of a man who was already quite bitter and angry. You didn't think he could get any angrier, but the U.S. penal system will do that to you.
Carl was released from Leavenworth in 1910 and headed to Denver, Colorado. There he had another experience which proved to be fairly formational, although it could just be an excuse he ended up using so he wouldn't have to say he was out and out gay.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a lot of excuses about not wanting to be with women.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, about a week after Carl arrived in Denver, he came down with what he called a first-class case of gonorrhea.
I do like that he's like, it's first class. It's not an economy class case of gonorrhea. This is first class. I'll have my martini when I fly, please.
You know it's first class because they serve you a dish of hot nuts.
This is so disgusting.
Well, this is what he actually said about that experience.
I began to suspect that ladies were very good things to leave alone. I have followed that policy pretty closely ever since. Because ladies are icky.
I heard that.
Because you know why? You know what the thing is about a lady? When you flip them over, you don't got any of that hobo grease.
Oh, I see.
I always
so technically
hobos,
they're cleaner. Yeah.
Hobos are like by screaming bits of soap.
I don't want to get into that right now.
He just came up with excuses for why he wanted to be with women. But there is a story that points towards, it doesn't matter. It does not matter whether or not he was gay.
Oh, no, absolutely.
It doesn't matter. But he fought it so hard, the lady doth protest too much because he met a man in a Denver holding facility, which is different now. It's not 420 Denver. Now it used to be just the mountain town. Before fucking old horse teeth John Elway carved his way through that town.
That's right.
It used to be a rough place. And so he went into a jail for a couple months for stealing a bike. He met a 50-year-old safe cracker.
Can you imagine him on a bike, by the way, with his butt just popping out,
ring,
his muscles?
Ring, I'm sick of this shitty bell. I can make enough noise.
He got arrested like three times for stealing a bicycle. He couldn't, because there were not really any cars around.
Right.
And also, like, he couldn't ride a horse either. So the only way of locomotion that he had two ways, either the railroads or the bicycle.
What was the name of the guy that Ice Cube had to knock out in the movie Friday?
Debo.
He just reminds me of Debo. Just like, I'm on a bike. There's nothing feminine about it.
You just must look like you took a circus bear and you shaved it. And so he went into jail and he started talking to this safecracker. Now, what he said was much older than him. He was about 20 years old because he just got out of Leavenworth. Meanwhile, he is 190 pounds of 6'2", a pile of muscle.
Yeah.
He's a ripped, hard, angry-faced little man.
Right.
And he met the safecracker. Then he said that he was super curious about learning how to blow safes because he wanted to up as much money as he could blow safes.
Wait, hold on. Yeah, yes. I am confused. Use now with the
terminology. It's terminology. Okay. And so he goes, he gets released. He was only for a couple months, but the other dude, the safecracker, had a 5-year term. So he gets out. He robs a hardware store. He takes a bunch of files.
Carl does.
He takes a bunch of files, straps them to his legs underneath his pants, which is a lot of effort, in order to break back into the jail to release his quote-unquote friend.
That's kind of nice.
If Only if you're fucking.
Well, I don't know. And that's that okay you. If they found love in jail. I mean, had this story not gone a horrible route that we'll get into, that's kind of sweet.
When I finally have to come visit you in jail.
I'm never going to go. I can't fit in jail.
It would be my choice as a friend, and I would use the visitor's area. So he broke into jail and then got caught.
Okay.
Because he's a fucking moron. Because right. Obviously not the most inconspicuous human being on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
They immediately put him back in jail, and so this is what he wrote in response. The thanks I got from old Cal was that he thought I was in love with him, and he tried to mount me, but I wasn't broke to ride, and he was, so I rode him. At that time, he was about 50 years old, and I was 20 or 21, but I was strong, and he was weak.
All right, hot stuff.
But wild. I think that means he's wild in love stuff. With him.
I just can't stop thinking about you just getting all buttered up, breaking me out of prison, with Marcus just behind you, just like shoving you into the vent.
Just go. Just go. If I just get as slippery as a fish, there's no way they can catch me. Oh, man, who knew the head guard was a noodler?
Henry, I'm getting out.
I'm getting in. No.
So after Denver, Carl continued his life of crime, mostly robbing churches, until he arrived at the Kansas State Fair and joined Colonel Dickey's Circle D Wild West Show.
It is just, as you can imagine, what they do after hours.
He didn't last long there and was fired for constantly fighting everything and everyone, including the horses.
It is a scene out of Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
It is real. He punched a horse.
Right.
Part of the reason why he was fired, this guy is a little stinker.
Yep, and that horse, it went and it talked to the manager and said, I am a working horse, and I deserve to be treated with a little respect when I'm at work.
Well, Carl saw the Circle D again at the Missouri State Fair a few weeks after getting fired, and in retaliation, burned down both their horse and cook tent before immediately leaving for St. Louis.
Ooh.
The most beautiful city in the near to Midwest.
Absolutely. We had a great time in St. Louis.
Did, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love St. Louis.
Home of Chuck Berry.
That's right.
There, Carl worked as a strike breaker for the Illinois Central Railroad.
Now, this is how much of a badass Carl was that he'd even fight for the man. He just wanted a job fighting, and there were so many jobs where you could legally fight. In 1910, it's amazing. There's so many goon squads.
Yeah. So their unions were on strike. Their railroad union was on strike. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
He just went in and just told them to get back to work with his pants down, or how did he do this?
Well, a lot of times these strikes would happen, and the companies would send in strike breakers, otherwise known
as just beat the living hell out
scabs, blacklegs, or knobsticks.
God, and he loved all those names for himself.
Yeah,
those are all different names he called his penis.
Yeah, could be.
Well, you know, scabs were just guys that went in and worked in place of the union workers.
Right.
Of course, they were some of the most reviled people in America at the time, but there were other strike breakers like Carl Panzram, who would just go in and beat the guys into submission. They would just beat them until they went back to work. And that was Carl's forte. That's how much of a dickhead he was. He just went ahead and added working for the man to his list of crimes.
He found a job that was applicable to his skill set, and he filled it.
I guess that is the American dream, isn't it,
Ben? It is.
Think about if LinkedIn was around.
Oh, my gosh.
And not responding to his ad me
request. Carl Panzram would like to add you to LinkedIn.
No.
Carl then made his way down to Jacksonville, Texas, and on the way picked up two pistols, a little robbery money from a church or two, and, in his words, a curly-haired, blue-eyed, rosy-cheeked fat boy.
Now, he was a yegg, which was his person. Technically, if you gave him a label, and I don't necessarily believe in labels, but at the same time, labels help us to identify. He was a yegg, mm-hmm. And so he had a boy captain. Now, this is, again, we talked about this last time.
I just can't stop thinking about Life of Louie, and I'm sorry for
it's
that.
True. Also, I think of myself
as
the rosy-cheeked fat boy just with Carl Panzram. Being like, he's my step. Dad, right?
Yeah, good lie. Good lie, you funny little boy.
But it's kind of like if Aladdin also had sex with Apu.
Could be, yes.
And just keep thinking of like Nick Cave songs, like he crawled through a whorehouse just to get to one fat boy's ass.
Oh, my goodness. Is that a Nick Cave song?
Oh, yeah. Stagger Lee. It's fucking one of his best.
Well, we might have to investigate those lyrics. I think it's kind of dangerous.
But when Carl and the fat boy were arrested in Texas, the cops took Panzram's guns but left him the fat boy.
How do they take the fat boy, leave the gun?
No.
There's no constitutional right to the fat boy.
You cannot get
between a yak and his boy.
You absolutely can.
No, it's like in between a mama chimp and a baby chimp.
I don't.
Can you imagine trying to take the boy?
Maybe they just couldn't lift the boy. Man, you're heavier than you look. Are you made of steel?
And the two were sent to the road gang, where the boy was taken away there, only to be given over to the boss man so he could become his fat boy.
I don't understand what's going on. What happened to the fat boy?
From what I can tell you, from being an altar boy, fat boys are currency.
I guess so.
And when the boss man got tired of the fat boy got sent back to Panzram and the prisoner's tent.
Oh, by this point, he's got all the boss man's oils all over him, and he can go back to the nest.
Disgusting stuff happening.
Now, in hobo terms, the boy was what you called a punk, a.k.a. an Angelina, a.k.a. a Prussian.
Interesting.
All right.
Now, or Prussian, not Prussian as in like from Prussia.
Oh, okay.
It's like P-R-U-S-H-I-N. I don't know why they were called Prussians, but that's what they were called. I don't even know why they were called Angelinas.
Something I know why he's called a fat boy.
I know what's called Angelina.
Why is he called an Angelina?
We don't want to get into it. Why would you even prompt that? You know he's going to say something horrendous.
In Carl's words, quote,
this comes from a fantastic letter where Henry Lesser, during this period of Henry Lesser, Henry was just like, can you please explain to me some criminal code?
And Henry Lesser was?
Henry Lesser was the prison guard that Carl Panzram gave all of his letters to. Essentially, Henry Lesser is the guy who took Carl Panzram's autobiography and spent 40 years trying to find a publisher for it. Henry Lesser is the reason why we know about Carl Panzram.
So in Carl's words,
a punk is a poofter, and a poofter is a pratter, and a pratter is similar to a fruiter. The only difference between the two is that one likes to sit on it, and the other likes to eat it.
It's like if Dr. Seuss was horrible.
Yes.
What are those words?
Oh, just wait. If you want to hear horrific Dr. Seuss, this next excerpt is going to give you all the Dr. Seuss you need, my friend.
Okay, but a poofer is a what?
A poofter is a pratter, and a pratter is similar to a fruiter.
And the only difference between the two is that one likes to sit on it, and one likes to eat it.
So a poofter is a fruiter.
A poofter is a, it's like...
In the criminal algebra,
like,
yeah.
Yes, is this what Common Core is like for children right now?
This is a further explanation. Or not even explanation, this is just a list of all the hobo and criminal terms that Carl Panzram picked up over the years.
I've been mixed up in every kind of crooked deal there is with every kind of crook there is. Con men and gang men, prowlers and boosters, stick-up artists, can-opener artists, and sometimes face artists, Peterman and boxmen, paper hangers and grape hangers, hustlers and rustlers, pimps and McGimps, hookers from the big town and hookers from the sticks. Big shots and pikers, dynamiters and sodomiters, fruiters and poofers, dig bats and gay cats, shiv men and gunmen, needle pumpers and snow snifters, hotheads and jugheads, wise guys and dumbbells, bootleggers and rum runners, wolves and gunsels, dips and short card gamblers, home guards and boomers, booze fighters and cop fighters, and last and not least, muscles and gusslers. I have put in 29 years in the game of hooks and crooks. There is no angle of this game that I haven't tried at some time or other. I've even tried running a gas station.
It sounds like when Johnny Depp played Hunter S. Thompson and he's describing
uppers,
the drugs
in
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Or a man desperate to sell fireworks. Just like, we got...
It doesn't explain what most of those mean, but he did expand on just a couple of them.
A face artist is an exceptionally well-experienced fruiter. One who knows his bananas better than an amateur. A face artist is one who goes downtown for lunch and nosedives into the bushes when he's hungry. I'm being subtle. I'm talking about cock.
Oh, I see. I was actually confused. I mean, there is something very literary about the way that he writes.
He's an incredible writer.
Yeah. He's a fantastic writer. I mean, the quote on the cover of Panzram, Journal of Murder is from Norman Mailer. Hmm. I mean, this guy is actually well-respected as a writer.
Very bizarre. Yeah, there's something very Bukowski about hearing the way that he describes his horrible, horribly difficult and strange life.
Oh, yeah, Bukowski, Hemingway, there's all kinds of different writers mixed up in here.
Yeah, he wears his influences on his sleeve.
That's it.
I mean, it's possible that Hemingway stole his whole act from Panzer.
What?
You think so?
Anyway, back in the prison camp with his fat boy, Panzram's 40 days were up, and he was ready to head out into the world alone. But the boss refused to let him go. Carl tried to escape, as was his wont, but he was caught and earned some time at the Snortin' Pole.
Ooh, what the heck? Now, I have had some fun nights.
Yes. It definitely sounds like a Paris Hilton activity.
Yes, it's the snorting pole. What do you guys do there? A bunch of cocaine.
Now, the snorting pole was a fairly common form of punishment in the Southern penal system in the early 20th century. How it worked was a rope was run through an eye hook affixed to the top of a 12-foot pole. And the rope would be attached to a pair of handcuffs snapped around the wrists of the prisoner. And the prisoner would then be pulled upward by the wrists above his head until his toes were barely touching the ground. He would then be stripped naked and whipped with what was called a red heifer, was an 8-foot-long snake whip. Particularly, they used black snake whips, which meant that they had a load of lead at the bottom that could be used as a blackjack in a pinch.
You know, it is just picturing this extremely muscular man in that position. I'm fairly certain that my older brothers had similar articles that they would read as
but
children.
But they gave their consent.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no things about it. If this was consensual, this would be the meatpacking industry. Like any point of the evening in New York City.
If he could say a safe word and they're like, okay, everything's fine now, go have some sandwiches, it would have been fine.
It does seem, in the very bottom of it, a little like homoerotic in terms of big burly rail men with their shirts open and him all cut up and like covered in tattoos just going like, yeah, whip me till I'm gay. You're gonna be like excited.
We don't have
to
whip you at all then.
Now, the snorting pole was so called because when men were whipped, they would, in Panzram's words, jerk, yell, jump, and snort. Oof. And about the experience, Carl said,
when a man is let down after being whipped, he has blood on his back and murder in his heart.
I was making jokes, but this is very serious. This is torture, and it's absolutely awful stuff.
Well, he did awful shit, too.
I know, but he was just one of the many people who were given this treatment, and I'm sure they were just caught doing God knows what.
Of course, yeah. I mean, Panzram was the worst of the worst, but this stuff was meted out equally to all prisoners. Right. This was not saved just for people like Panzram.
Yeah.
And, of course, this kind of punitive action, it only makes bad criminals worse.
Oh, absolutely.
It does absolutely nothing to help them out. But Carl saying that he had murder in his heart, he would not act on that just yet. After being released, Carl set back out on simple mayhem. He would rob chicken coops and burn them down, or set fire to prairie grass or the woods or anything that would burn. Because for a while, that was how Panzram, that's how he got out his frustration. Right. That's how he got out his anger. He just burned shit down until finally one day that wasn't enough anymore.
Well, now I remember, what was it, Otis Toole and
Otis Toole.
Otis Toole and the other fella there.
Henry Lee Lucas.
Henry Lee Lucas. They would always rob chicken coops. What did they get from it?
Chickens.
They just take the chickens?
You take a hobo in 1920, that motherfucker is going to love a chicken.
Just also, feel like it's like on a Resident Evil, they're just collecting eggs to make themselves stronger. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
But also, at the same time, the noisiest crime of all. And this is why he keeps...
shut up! And then you got a bunch of chickens you got to deal with.
Shut up!
Sounds like a nightmare.
It's why he keeps getting caught.
Yeah, that's true.
Carl would also take pot shots at the windows of farmhouses from the freight trains he was riding just to occupy time. And who knows if he actually hit anybody while he was taking those pot shots.
Right.
And when he ran afoul of a railroad official, Carl would pull out the Bible he kept with him, along with an accounts book forged with evidence of him being a good, hardworking Christian, down on his luck, and usually that was good enough to get him out of trouble.
He keeps doing that for the rest of his life. I even think that the game with Henry Lesser is a long con, that he was trying to get on the other side of Henry Lesser in order to maybe help him get out of jail.
Sure.
I think that everything he did, he learned, you fake being nice. Because when you're big and scary, it's a thing that Ed Larson learned, which is very funny for Roundtable Gentlemen, because you're such a big, scary-looking guy, that when you're nice, people have like a reaction. Like
they're confused.
They're confused, and you can get a lot over on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But Panzram's lies and schemes with all of these railroad officials didn't always work out quite so simply as him just telling a lie and having the guard tell him to move on. Mm. One night, Carl was riding in a coal car with two other hobos. They were found by a railroad brakeman, being the guy who would apply the brakes to individual cars on the trains when need be. This guy would walk from train to train to train. Usually the brakeman was the guy that discovered hobos riding the rails.
They call him a squeaker, they call him a pumper, they call him a driver, they call him a stinker. And they also call him soon to be victim.
Yeah. This seems like a very dangerous job.
Extremely dangerous job. And when the brakeman started hassling the three hobos, asking them who they were, what they were doing, Carl pulled a gun, pointed it at the brakeman, and said,
"I'm the fellow that goes around the world doing people good."
The brakeman understandably started backtracking, saying he never threw hobos off trains. And then he offered to buy the trio dinner, along with giving Carl everything he had on him. And Carl responded by overpowering the brakeman and raping him on the floor of the coal car. And when he was done, Carl then turned the gun toward the other two bums and made them rape the brakeman just as he had.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, because he kept saying that sodomy was the gift that civilization gave him, which is very interesting. And he's quoted as saying,
"I knew more about sodomy than old boy Oscar Wilde ever thought of knowing. I would start off the morning with sodomy, work as hard at it as I could a day, and sometimes half of the night."
It's very intense.
He's extremely intense, and you can tell in his writings, anytime he talks about sodomy or writes about it, you can hear the twinkle in his eye.
He's trying to freak the squares a little bit.
A little bit.
The idea is to bring it up all the time, so he knows how unsettling that is to everyone to use it as a weapon. Basically, he's weirdly using his sexuality as a weapon. Well, kind of like Eileen Wuornos in that weird way, where it becomes weaponized and it becomes this thing, because especially a 1910s man, what is he most afraid of? Getting poopy pooed in a fucking a boxcar.
Some things never change. You know, there are some things that last eternal.
I would put
eternal.
That in my top five fears.
Just feel that way. Yes, absolutely. But of course, as a person who was sexually abused as a child, I mean, so many times we see it today and just throughout human history, they just repeat the crimes over and over again, and they do it to take the power back of them being such a horrible being victimized.
Oh, absolutely, and especially in Panzram's case. I mean, I guarantee you that every time he was doing something like this, he had the four hobos that gang wrecked him when he was 14 in his mind the entire time.
God,
right.
Oof. So
that's brutal. Being a hobo is bad enough. It's hard enough, and then you have this situation. My God. Yeah.
In San Francisco, Panzram was picked up for trying to fence a stolen watch in a bar called the Louvre, which was so named because it was decorated with nude oil paintings and boasted the longest bar in the world.
Wow, that's kind of exhausting. What do drunks want? A long walk. Hey, I've always heard they want a long, long walk.
Thankfully, I get my heart rate up so I can go home and be prepped for when I'm beating my family.
Yeah, well, that's okay. We got some competition. There's the world's biggest zigzaggy bar coming up across the street.
It's called Pukies.
Oh, Pukies the Zigzaggy Bar.
After getting caught for stealing the watch, Carl was told if he pleaded guilty to stealing the watch, he'd get a short sentence. But instead of getting a short sentence, he was given 7 years in the Oregon State Penitentiary, known to be, at the time, one of the worst prisons in America, which was saying a lot.
Yes, and the Oregon State Penitentiary, because of this, essentially, he now viewed himself as he trusted somebody, and they reneged on their word.
The prosecutor.
So the prosecutor reneged on his word, and this is going to be sort of like his Professor Xavier school for of special children of criminality once he gets to Oregon State Penitentiary. This is going to kick it up a notch in his world.
He would be sort of a Wolverine type, I suppose, or maybe a Beast type as well.
Actually, someone did compare him to Logan on Twitter. Yeah.
All right. Well, so, it must have been a really nice watch anyway. 7 years for stealing a watch. That's a bit stiff, I think. But
so the administrator of Oregon State was a man by the name of Minto, who ran the prison as what could be considered a model of the for-profit prisons that operate in America to this day.
This whole chapter of his life reminds me of Ernest Goes to Jail.
How exactly?
Does he have a twin? Electricity powers at the end?
He wished.
Well, yes, he definitely wished, and we will get into some electrocution here.
Minto cut the pay of working inmates from $1 a day down to $0.25 to save money, and then he funneled cash that once went to the families of prisoners into what he called an institution betterment fund, which was used to buy machinery that earned the state even more profits, of which Minto more than likely took a cut. And shit like this is still happening today. And in fact, it's I mean, now it's going up to the highest levels of power.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it on Able Against Top Pat. Geo Group and Core Civic, they own the majority of the private prisons, the 12% of the private prisons who house the majority of illegal immigrants. Arrests for illegal immigrants are up, or undocumented workers are up, and deportations are down.
So they're keeping them in there.
Exactly. And we're going to talk about more on Top Pat. This is modern day slavery, and it's been happening, as we'll talk about, in this country ever since the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah, these private prisons, I mean, this when Minto was doing it, all this was going back into the state, and corrupt officials could skim off the top, and now it's going to shareholders, because these private prisons, they actually manufacture stuff. A lot of times in private prisons, they'll have prisoners actually manufacturing riot gear for police officers.
There was a prison in South Carolina that had a contract with Victoria's Secret. So Victoria's Secret, literally,
how
you're
horny
giving
would
you,
those prisoners be?
I have no idea. They must have been pretty upset.
Call Panzram, just putting on a negligee, just being like, "Don't you fucking look at me? Don't you look at me?
I don't know if they're allowed to try on the bras before they ship them out. But what a strange Valentine's Day gift that is, made by prisoners, honey. Here you go.
And in Oregon State, Mento. His staff was just as heartless as he was. His main guy was Jim Binegar Cooper, known in the prison as the Man of Blogs.
Jeez, it's like it's
medieval.
It's medieval.
Who cares? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because even Panzram said that, is that one time he went to Spain. Afterwards, you're going to find he took a big European tour. And the third episode, we'll get to his European tour. And he explained that when he went to go see all of the museums celebrating the Inquisition, like doing all this shit. And he was just like, it was the same shit that he got in this jail. This guy is crazy. Vinegar Cooper.
Yeah.
Like he would wear gloves and he loved roses.
Yeah.
And religious hymns. Like, he would just listen to religious hymns as he whipped you and laughed.
Yeah, he'd sing them to himself. Yeah, and he would break prisoners by lashing them with a cat of nine tails. So it's a guy named Vinegar lashing you with a cat of nine tails in a room full of roses while he's singing, "Oh, lovely, thou art my God."
Sounds like a Madonna video.
It might be a Madonna video. And now I'm hungry for salt and vinegar chips, which we get in the green room on all the live shows.
And we thank all of our venues for providing us with salt and vinegar chips. But the cat of nine tails, that wasn't even close to the worst torture used at Oregon State. That honor fell to the hummingbird. The hummingbird was a steel bathtub filled with 4 to 5 inches of ice-cold water. The prisoner would be chained hand and foot and lied inside. The torturer would take a sponge, much like the one used in the electric chair, to direct the current and connect that sponge to an electric battery using wires.
Now, to be fair, this is what Bill Belichick did to make Tom Brady so good.
I mean, it's about discipline.
It is about discipline.
Now, the torturer, wearing rubber gloves and a rubber slicker to prevent himself from getting electrocuted, would begin by rubbing the soles of the feet with the electrified sponge, moving up the body slowly. And Panzram said the sensation felt like millions of red-hot needles sticking into the skin. Now, the reason why they use that wet sponge, and it's also the reason why they used to use the wet sponge when they would put guys in the chair, because that wet sponge directs the current. It puts it all into one place. If they didn't use the wet sponge in the electric chair, that puts the electricity all over the person's body.
And it'd kill
and
you.
It cooks them. It cooks them much slower. Mm-hmm. Remember Green Mile?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they didn't put the sponge into the water with the guy that loved the mouse so much?
Yeah, John Coffey. It's like the drink, but it's not spelled the same.
well, John Coffey, that was different. This was the Cajun guy that,
my little mouse.
Little pudgy mouse of his own.
Yeah. Well, what that sponge did is it directs the current directly into their brain, and that's what the current did at a much lower voltage with the hummingbird. Is that they could, when they got the sponge, he could just poke it right into a certain point in the skin, and you would feel that sensation of those needles on your skin, and they would move it up their entire body. This is what Panzram said about it.
2 or 3 minutes and the victim is ready for the grave or the madhouse, yet there is not a single mark or bruise on his whole body.
Now, what I say, too, what I liked in the beginning of his explanation, when he, because we learn about all these tortures from his letters to Henry Lesser, and one of the things that Carl wrote is like, it's called the hummingbird, not to be confused with a hummingbird, which is a tiny little cute bird that just, wonderful to see. It's not that bird.
It's not.
No.
No, it's worse than that.
That bird brings nothing but delight. And if I see anybody who says anything different about the hummingbird, I'm going to push him down into a bath.
All right. Yeah, I know. So this is, it reminds me of Guantanamo Bay style tactics as well. But yeah. I mean, I don't think they were trying to get government secrets out of Carl Panzerin.
Well, they talk about it all the time. They're desperately trying to get confessions. They always want confessions.
Oh, sure.
Everything's confession based because that's how you get somebody, that's how you just cut and dry, get them into jail. So even talk about how a lot of times the jails themselves would try to cut down on the punishment tactics because they're not getting anything but lies from people.
Yeah. Right, right. It reminds me of that film Shocker as well, which is a great horror movie.
Today's sponsor for Last Podcast on the Left is Stamps.com. Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. And in fact, we here at Last Podcast on the Left have used Stamps.com to grow our DIY operation right here. And we know a lot of people out there listening to Last Podcast on the Left are DIY artists as well. And you can use Stamps.com to avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. You can create your Stamps.com account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. 7 days a week. Stamps.com makes it easy. They send you a digital scale and it automatically calculates exact postage. There's no need to lease an expensive postage meter. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in the code LEFT. That's Stamps.com. Enter LEFT. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Now, Oregon State, like most overly punitive prisons, was already a powder keg waiting to go off by the time Panzram showed up. And Panzram's constant escape attempts did nothing to ease the tensions either.
This man was a one-man riot.
Yeah.
Mm. What he did when he first went into this jail, because he knew basically he saw what happened. What he realized, Carl Panzram has realized every time he goes into jail, is that you have to be really fucking aggressive as soon as you walk in to let everybody know who you are and what you do. And I think it was a self-defense tactic. I think that he knew that if I show up and everybody thinks I'm the scariest dude in the room, there's going to be less and less people who fuck with me. And
also,
he started really adopting it here.
Doesn't hurt that he is by far the scariest person in the room.
Yes.
That helps play into that narrative.
Well, I think with Panzram, it wasn't about making the prisoners scared of him. It was about making the guards scared of him. Because the prisoners look at Carl Panzram and they're like, oh, don't fuck with that guy. Just immediately. But the guards, he feels like he needs to show the guards who's boss right off.
So one of the first riots he did is that he broke, basically he waited for a break in the shift and the officer left. He somehow had held the door so that he could pop out of it. I forget exactly how he got out of the prison, out of his cell, but he was locked alone on the bridge with everybody, the officers on the outside. He stuffed all of the locks of everybody else's cell, including the door leading into the hallway, with rags so people couldn't get through, and then he burned everything in the hallway until they had to put him back in isolation. So he was just... He's a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
And all this stuff, his prison records, I mean, they actually looked those up, and he did all of this shit.
Wow.
This isn't just him trying to sound like a badass and saying that he did all this shit that he actually didn't do. All of this stuff is on record. And he has a steel trap memory. He remembers everything that happened to him. It's actually pretty amazing. Well, Panzan tried to escape maybe half a dozen times, and every single time Panzram tried to escape, there would be a half dozen inmates that would try to escape right behind him in the exact same way. And even though the attempts weren't successful, Panzram wrote,
"If I couldn't escape, I would help everybody else that I could." He's the Joker.
It is interesting. He's actually, he's helping out people.
Yeah.
As he sees it.
Yeah, and the person who Panzram eventually got out was a 21-year-old kid named Otto Hooker.
Ooh.
And one night, Hooker managed to get outside the walls, and Warden Minto decided to join the hunt with his shotgun. But Hooker had managed in the interim to get a hold of a gun himself, and before the manhunt was over, Warden Minto was dead by Otto Hooker's hand.
Well, they got to stop putting those barrels of guns just at all the entrances and exits.
That was just America at the time.
Yeah.
Minto was replaced by his brother, John, who cracked down on the prison even harder. But that only made Panzram spread more mayhem. The harder you came at Panzram, the harder he came back every single time.
Hmm.
Now, he robbed the storeroom and stole a few dozen bottles of lemon extract.
Ooh,
lemon extract.
That's kind of fun.
85% alcohol.
Get you drunk real good.
Oh, what, they just did a bunch of booze there?
No, well, you can make your own booze. Like that.
Well,
yeah, and then using that lemon extract, he got a group of inmates drunk, stayed sober himself, and egged them into a brawl with the guards. He then set the prison shops on fire in an attempt to escape in the confusion. But he was caught, and that got him assigned to the bullpen along with the other rebellious prisoners.
And that's also where they created Mad Dog's 2020 Lemon Yellow Sun, which is a wonderful liqueur if you're in the mood for something that makes you taste like you were a trailer.
But you see, what they were doing here, too, what Oregon State was learning is that they kept building tinier prisons within the prison.
Oh, sure.
In order to specifically house Panzram, as they were, because John Minto was incredibly mad about what happened to his brother and blamed Panzram for the you started this shit. So when this happened, they had just finished their brand new tiny Russian doll jail inside of this jail, which was called the bullpen. The bullpen features a thing called the bull circle, which is literally a circle in chalk written on the ground, and all the prisoners have to stand hand on shoulder in a circle, walking in a circle all day long, and if anybody leaves a circle or falls down, they're severely punished.
Good Lord.
Yeah, Panzram said that it was 102 steps around because they were made to walk it during all daylight hours. If the sun was up and they were in the bullpen, they were just walking around in the circle. They weren't allowed to talk to each other at all. If you talked, you got a beating. If you stepped out of line, you got a beating. If you walked too quickly or too slowly, you got a beating. And if you tried to leave the circle, shot on sight.
Well, they were just a pentagram away from summoning the devil. If they would have just had a pentagram in the middle of that circle.
Honestly, it just reminds me of Conan turning the fucking...
Oh, yeah.
Like, turning the wheel.
Yeah.
Like, it's just him... You're just making him stronger. You're just making him do cardio.
That's a lot of cardio, yeah.
Well, when Panzram got back to his cell, he continued to sow discord. He'd bang on his bucket all night long. He'd scream constantly. And he would scream and make so much noise. He was down in the basement. He was down in the hall. But still, other prisoners would hear him, and they would respond by screaming and banging their buckets as well, and it would spread throughout the entire prison.
John Minto would sit up all night because it would work its way through the vents, and he would sit in the jail, wait, like eyes open, staring at the ceiling, and just hearing all night long.
Drive him nuts, huh?
Yeah. And eventually, this chaos led to the escape of two more prisoners named Cocky O'Brien and Stepanov Smith.
Oh, all right.
All right.
And they sawed through the locks of their cells with stolen hacksaws and used strips of blankets tied to grapples made from bucket handles to scale the main wall.
That's like Batman Begins.
It is. What are the odds they went immediately to the world's longest bar? I hear there's a place. It's the world's longest bar. We got to go get smashed.
I don't know. Oh, there, Cocky. I'm sick of walking.
And since the administration couldn't punish Cocky O'Brien and Stepanov Smith, they punished the chief troublemaker instead, Carl. They took him down to the basement, stripped him naked, chained him to a door, and unleashed the fire hose.
The fire hose!
It sounds fun if it's like, that means they're 50 cent fire bombs.
Yeah, it's cute. And it's like, you have like a lady in like a thin white shirt with a fireman's helmet on. She's getting lightly sprayed with a hose. That's fine and nice.
Sure.
But when it comes down to this, it was subtly the worst punishment in the prison.
Yeah.
Because they said they stand 20 feet back and then full bore slam. And they said one medical record, the force was enough to blow a 6-foot man 10 feet back. Yeah. And he's shackled to a door. They basically shackled to a door completely nude and then just...
Good Lord. Brutal. Yeah.
Like you're the horniest little fire in the world.
Mm. Yeah, he said his entire body was bruised and swollen. This is what he said about other parts of him.
My privates were as big as those of a jackass. The full effects of this didn't wear off completely. And I tell you what,
I'm thankful.
Yeah, well, that's another Ed Larson situation from the round table, but we don't need to get into all that.
Now, and another example of Carl taking out his anger on anyone he could in place of the people he really wanted to hurt, Carl wrote,
"This is more than 10 years ago, but still, every time I catch an Oregonian and get him in a corner, I give him hell. Many a man has paid for what those men done to me that Sunday morning. I'm coming for Fred Armisen. If I even see a trailer for Portland."
Oh, my. I don't think you would like that show very much.
"Oh, I give that TV hell with my bottom half."
Carl, there's a nice bird in the film, though, or in the movie, in the TV show.
"More like put a bird up my ass."
All right. Well, not everything has to... Can you imagine just a poor Oregonian man, just a door-to-door salesman?
Making his craft beer.
"I didn't know. I'm not that person. What do you want from me?"
Sitting outside with his wonderful cold brew coffee.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, news of Carl's hosing reached all the way to the State House, and the second warden Minto was removed for cruelty. This was a statewide scandal. It was a huge deal.
It got written up in the papers. Carl Panzram became known to America for the first time because of this whole story. Mm-hmm. Basically, as an example of he's a hardened criminal that has only gotten worse since receiving such intense corporal punishment.
And so we're in the 1920s here?
No, this is still the 1910s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but the late 1910s.
All right, so the Great Depression is looming.
Great Depression's still like 10 years away. We're, I guess, in the Gilded Age right now. This is when everyone is getting stupid rich.
All right. So maybe they have
Fat cat time.
Okay, all right.
Now, that warden, Minto, when he was fired, he was replaced with a reformer named Charles A. Murphy.
Now, this is very interesting.
This is super interesting stuff. Like, this story, the story between Charles Murphy and Carl Panzram, it's very interesting because Murphy, he was maybe the first person of authority to not treat Carl like a complete animal.
And his great-grandson went on to become RoboCop, which is kind of cool.
Yes, and in this story... Carl Panzram blossoms sort of like Lauryn Hill in Sister Act 2.
Oh, we reference that movie an awful lot, as a matter of fact.
Pretty much any movie with nuns. Yeah, Sister Act, Nuns on the Run. Pretty much anyone pretending to be a nun. We love.
I love fake nuns. I hate real nuns.
That's my problem
with watching The Keepers. I just don't care about a dead nun.
No, you have to care. She's a human being. Sesnik. And I watched episode 1 of The Keepers. I'm excited to finish the series.
Murphy began his reign at Oregon State by abolishing the hole, the bullpen, and all the torture, and he made potato peeling the worst punishment an inmate could receive, which earned him the nickname Spud Murphy.
Yeah.
Very fun. I love Spud Murphy.
Yeah. Murphy also upped the quality of the food, fixed the phone lines, and made more jobs available to prisoners. And after these reforms were put into place, tensions eased and disciplinary reports plummeted.
I thought it was really interesting about the food that I didn't know before is that they basically served only carbs. Before, they would serve either rice or potatoes because when people came to inspect the prisons, they wanted them to look plump.
Yeah.
Right? So they would literally fat them up with carbs, but they didn't get any nutrition, so there would be so many... There was many prisoners that would die from lack of nutrition because of how little vegetables or sunlight or water that they got.
Scurvy. Right.
Scurvy, yeah,
makes
sense.
Prisons were full of scurvy at this point.
Still happens to this day.
But even though all these reforms were put into place, Panzram didn't particularly care and kept trying to escape. He was caught again with a saw in his cell, but Murphy responded, instead of sending him to the hole or the bullpen, by increasing his rations and giving him magazines to read.
"Well, I ain't taking nothing unless it's Golf Digest."
Here it is.
I mean, why are you being so nice to Snarl Panzram?
You ever heard of this fun magazine called Cracks? Here it is.
Alternative facts. Snarky commentary.
When Panzram was caught yet again, Murphy called him into his office. Panzram immediately identified himself as the worst guy in the prison. He was a lost cause. Murphy couldn't possibly reach him. So Murphy, in a gigantic gamble, told Panzram that the next day, the gates of the prison would be open to Carl, who could go wherever he wanted, just so long as he gave his word that he would be back By supper time.
This is honestly a massive mistake.
Well, I kind of agree, but this is what the conservatives got all over Dukakis for in 88. This is why H.W. got elected, soft on crime.
And this is what Carl said happened.
I fully intended to escape at the first chance, but something went wrong somehow. Old boy Spud was as good as his word. He opened the gates and I was free to go any damn place I wanted. I just stood there dumbfounded and so surprised at what I couldn't understand that I didn't try to escape at all. I just walked around a little while to see if any screws was watching me, but I didn't see any, so I sat down and tried to dope out what it was all about. Of one thing I was sure, I could have gone if I had cared to. And another thing I was sure of was that there wasn't any more honor about me than the stone I was sitting on. I just thought, as I couldn't understand what it was all about, that I would stick around a while and see what would happen. And then I would sure beat it after a few days. That evening, I walked up to the gate of the prison and demanded to be let back in.
It's like the end of the movie Problem Child. He didn't know why they were being so nice, but then he found out it's because they cared for him.
Mm-hmm. Now, after that, Carl started to change. First, Murphy gave Carl a job. And when Carl seemed to be pretty good at that, the warden organized a baseball team. Oh. And Carl joined that, too.
But he was terrible at baseball.
He was really bad at baseball.
Of course baseball is very difficult.
Because he kept chasing after the pitcher, being like, throwing a ball at me. Well, I'll throw a ball at you, Mr. Little Pitcher.
He might not have the temperament for that game. I don't want to see him with a bat, either. No. It seems kind of dangerous. What's the movie where the person holds on to the bat and just hits all the people on the bases? Remember
I
that?
Think it's Major League.
Maybe written, yeah, it might be Major League.
When Carl wasn't any good at the baseball team, they didn't give up. They told him to join the prison marching band.
And they tried to put him on drums, which you think would be perfect for him.
Yeah, you know, he knows how to drum.
He kept playing with the flute. They tried to give him the flute, but he just bit the head off of it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's kind of adorable.
Yeah, but unfortunately, as Carl wrote, he said he was too dumb to learn a musical instrument. Aww. So they made him the drum major.
You see, anybody can play the drums, right, Marcus?
No, that's not what a drum major is.
What is
it? You don't know what a drum major is?
I didn't go to band.
He's too dumb to play in his... I don't... Okay, let me guess, because I actually don't know. I think the drum major is the one who marches in front of everybody, and then they just have to follow him.
Yes.
And technically, people give him praise, even though everyone else doesn't.
No, the drum major is the one with pizzazz. The drum major is the leader of the whole thing. They conduct...
Yes, that's right. But they get a lot of praise.
Yeah, the drum major, he's like a fancy conductor man with a big hat with a large feather on.
Yeah, it was like... so what Rick Perry used to do.
No, Rick Perry was a yell leader. That's a cheerleader thing. You're
okay.
Getting everything all mixed
I'm
up here.
I'm sorry.
Come, beat that drum. Beat it like a fat boy's drum. Beat it like a fat boy's drum.
He is wonderful.
Beat it like a fat boy's drum.
Wonderful.
Whatever gets him into character.
When he couldn't handle the drum major job either, just go and watch a YouTube video of a drum major.
I know what a
imagine
drum major
Carl
is.
Imagine Carl Henry. Go watch a video of a drum major and imagine Carl Panzram do it. And enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
When he wasn't able to do that, they made him carry the prison flag, and Carl said that he could do that just fine.
That's great. That's a fun job, because you get to wave the flag like your Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Just him confused, staring at people, smiling at him, wondering who he needs to grab at first.
Every week, both the marching band of 30 men and a baseball team of 12 would be trucked around the state, guarded by just one man, to play other prisons or exhibitions with regular teams.
Oh, this is
irresponsible.
Guy. I don't think so, because Carl Panzram, it's like Necessary Roughness. That dude gets off the bus first, mm-hmm. and everyone, that's a chilling effect on the other team.
And they had a magical summer.
It's true. It is kind of like, what was it, the Replaceables? What's the other?
The Replacements?
The Replacements.
Yes. This is kind of nice.
Yeah, they had a magic. There was like 42 guys, only one guard. A couple of them did escape, but
sure. Yes,
you know.
But Murphy always said that 85% of them came back the very next day.
That is quite 15%. It's quite a bit. I'm gonna go steal second, and I'm just gonna keep on going.
It was an experiment.
Yes,
it was an experiment.
Might not have worked, but.
So after that magical summer, Carl was put to work as a trustee outside the walls, and he was allowed to stay out in the evenings after dark, where he would walk around talking to other people and, in his words, smoking and enjoying life.
Yeah.
Look at that.
And they were even talking parole for him. But It wasn't to last.
Yeah. Oh, weird.
I know.
Carl was still facing 4 more years of his sentence, and one night, while out drinking with the girls, having a great time.
Honestly, it says that it does not sound like he was sleeping with these girls.
No, no, I don't think that he was.
No, he was just hanging out with a bunch of nurses and having a great time, just let himself be himself.
Let his hair down.
Well, he had no hair, but
no, that
proverbial.
Is true.
Let his mustache down.
And, you know, something just switched in his head. You know, after a few drinks, Carl started to think that there was no real reason to go back to the prison when he could be having this good of a time all the time. He wrote,
"The night was warm and the moon was shining bright. A freight train was whistling down in the yards, calling to me. I figured. Anyway, I answered. My Uber's coming."
Sounds like a Van Morrison lyric.
He's a very lyrical writer. Yeah. But he was recaptured after a week in a spectacular gun battle.
Because he said that he was so sad to return back to Murphy, yeah, having disappointed him. Mm-hmm. He was more scared of disappointing him than going back to jail.
Hmm. Yeah, because when he got back to jail, Murphy was just as... He was extremely disappointed, and he had decided he was going to make an example of him. He reopened the bullpen and kept Carl hanging by handcuffs on the cell door. But Carl, you know, usually when they punished him, he'd scream, he'd yell, he'd destroy everything he could. But during his entire time, this punishment, didn't say a word.
I thought Spud Murphy was going to make him peel the big potatoes. That's the worst. That's the worst.
These are pumpkins.
But once Carl was finally placed back in general population, he sawed out of his cell, stole a trusty cook uniform, used a bar spreader to take out the last obstacle, and escaped Oregon State forever.
Oh, my goodness.
And for his troubles, Warden Murphy lost his job, and as he had been under close scrutiny during his entire experiment, he was declared a total failure, and many of the lessons learned about prison reform during his reign were totally forgotten.
Well, you need to have a little middle ground. Maybe allowing them out at the bars at night isn't the best idea.
I think that was a bit much.
That was a bit much. But, you know, baseball.
Baseball is a great idea, but fence it in. Put a little fence around it.
This sport is so boring. It's more exciting in jail when I get to be really close with the men.
Yeah.
They're all spread out on all these bases.
Honestly, amateur wrestling probably would have done good, although I'm not sure if he could. Well, that might have been too much. Yeah, that's a good point. He might have just been the defunct champion because no one wanted to wrestle him.
So in the summer of 1920, Panzram showed up in New Haven, Connecticut to settle a score with his old nemesis, President William Howard Taft.
Ooh.
Taft, about 7 years out of office at this point.
I hate it when a fat boy is allowed to grow up to be a fat president.
The fattest of all.
So Carl broke into the house of an ex-president and stole $40,000 in jewelry and bonds, plus a .45 Colt automatic. Carl used the money he made fencing the jewels to buy a yacht.
The Akista. There's so many ships.
I love it. Eileen Wuornos, that man who loved her, had a lot of yachts as well.
Yeah.
I love a good yacht.
There's plenty of yachts around.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yachts used to be a lot easier to get a hold of. And if you got $40,000 in jewels, you could absolutely buy a yacht.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And that's even after taking the hit on the fence cut, you know?
What about yacht taxes and yacht holding fees and maintenance fees?
And the need for water. It is tough to find.
After Carl bought the Akista, he would finally add mass murder to his already long list of crimes.
And the yacht is what did it.
the yacht was what finally gave him the platform, what finally gave him the site in order to commit the murders that presumably he'd wanted to commit all along.
Boats are bad news.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the name? Natalie Wood? No, what's the name of the wood? Jack Nicholson.
No, it's Natalie Wood. Yeah, they got killed on the boat. And, yes.
Christopher Walken tap danced her off the fucking edge of it.
Perhaps. Talented guy.
Carl made his way to New York City in his yacht and docked off City Island in the Bronx. He would make his way all the way down to the bottom tip of Manhattan at 25 South Street and find sailors who seemed to have a bit of cash and promised him big pay and easy work up on his yacht. And when the sailor would inevitably say yes, Carl would have them bring all their possessions up to the Bronx. And this was a pretty smart move on Carl's part.
Get all of your money. Yeah. What size shoes are you? Do you have bigger shoes than this?
I do.
Do you have bigger shirts?
I do.
Bring those too.
Bring them. Every last penny you
also,
say.
Also, hey, one thing. Do you have
your butt?
I do.
Yeah, bring that too. Yeah, we're going to need it.
I've been trying to lose it.
Well,
I can't
I'm going
to
need it. You're not going to need it. I'm going to need it. So.
Well, okay.
Well, the genius part of that was that Carl was close enough for the trip, but he was far enough away where the sailors couldn't leave anything behind. I mean, the tip of Manhattan all the way up to the Bronx. I mean, that's a, 10 miles, or maybe like 3 or 4 miles.
I say by a schooner, it's 3 miles. If you're going how many, depending on how many knots you're going.
As the crow flies.
It depends if the jib is wired or if the scoot is full.
That's right. That's correct.
There, Carl would get them as drunk as he could, as soon as he could, what we call pulling a Dahmer.
Ah, yes. I didn't know that we called it that, but...
We'll do now.
We'll do it now.
What, I call pulling a Dahmer?
I think you're going to call it pulling a Dahmer.
Honestly, if there was, like, an a la carte way to be murdered, and you ordered the Dahmer,
yeah,
it would be this.
That would be it.
It would be
this.
And sometimes he would sodomize him, but sometimes he'd just let him go to sleep. And while they were asleep, Carl would use the very gun he stole from President William Howard Taft to end the sailor's life with a single shot to the head. He would then tie a rock around their dead body, take it about a mile out into the sea in his rowboat, and drop the victim overboard.
It's about the implications.
It is. This is so unreal, but this is all true.
This is all true.
I mean, this is...
He used the gun of an ex-president to kill 10 men over a three-week period.
God. Oh, my gosh.
Great criminal. Terrible guy.
Yeah. Horrible guy. Yeah, absolutely.
He only stopped when other people docked at City Island noticed how much loot he was accumulating.
Him just dressed like a fancy queen with a big crown on, just draped with jewels and many layers of sailor's clothes.
Yes.
Just out here on my yacht. Enjoying my many layers.
You look like Razor Ramon.
The next two sailors he hired were kept alive, and the three of them started traveling down the East Coast, robbing yachts together. But they only got as far as Atlantic City before they got caught in a squall and were run aground. And from there, Carl would embark on a world tour of mayhem and horror, which we will get to on the conclusion of Carl Pendrum.
Yeah, this old dude's just getting started.
Just getting going here. What's that video game? Is it Fist of Fury with the huge dude?
You're thinking of Final Fight. He does
Final
totally
Fight.
Remind
oh,
me
shit.
Of
That's
yeah.
it. He's just the huge guy just spins around and just the destruction in his path.
And did you know in Final Fight, that guy's the mayor?
Isn't that something?
Interesting.
Well, I'd vote for him.
Yeah, he is the, if you were to pick, like, if president were to be chosen by who is strongest and toughest.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, the idea of President Camacho in Idiocracy.
Right.
He would be president of the United States of America.
Absolutely.
Carl Panzram, whoo.
Wow, what a story. Obviously, again, a horrible human being who made terrible decisions and terrible choices. And it's quite unfortunate because obviously he was intelligent enough to know how to write, to understand what he was doing, and quite frankly, intelligent enough to travel around the world.
He said that he was intelligent enough. He did it very deliberately. All of these crimes, he learned that might makes right early on, and then he just kept expressing it because it made him feel good.
And he's got, like, not like all of these guys, but a lot of these guys, like, say, like, for example, like Richard Ramirez, there's not a single shred of goodness in that piece of shit.
Right.
Like, he is just pure fucking evil. And even, like, Gacy, like, there's nothing in that guy redeemable. But with Carl Panzram, it's like, sometimes you see that little redeemable moment.
Or
like,
was it an act, though?
You see that little spark.
I think there's also something to be said about he didn't kill women. And so as men, we're a little bit less sensitive. I do think that's the case because, you know, he gets, I don't know. I just feel like you don't treat him the same way.
I mean, making a point. Whatever he was doing, he was making a point about his treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, he was making a point about his treatment, but I hesitate to call Carl Panzram, as we do a lot of these guys, I hesitate to call him pure evil.
Yes.
I really do.
He was, he got it pounded into him, too.
Yeah.
There's a part of it where he just kind of only learned punishment, and so then he gave a lot of punishment.
Either way, no excuses for his actions, but an interesting story.
No excuses, but I think that he's a much more fascinating character. Like, I cannot believe there's never been a Carl Panzram movie. Like, just the part about him, just the relationship between him and Charles Murphy alone could be a film.
And I'm going to say Tom Hardy for Carl Panzram.
Well, he played Bronson, and Bronson is the new American thing. It's
like
the same thing.
We can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't. It would have been a good call.
It would have been
ago.
Good. It would have been good. You know what? Harrison Ford,
Goldberg,
make him old.
The wrestler.
If Bill Goldberg,
Goldberg
could
the,
act,
but
yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, but he showed that he could act in Santa's Sleigh.
No,
see?
He didn't. He just he did a bunch of taglines and stabbed people. All right. Well, we'll go on. We'll continue. This is an amazing story.
This is
one of my favorites that we've covered.
But you know what? The reason why it's such a good story is because we have it straight from the man himself, and the man himself can write.
Yeah, and he can do a lot of other. Disgusting things.
Absolutely.
And we will get into the horrific things that he did across the world.
All right. Well, let's see here. Speaking of across the world, we're going to Toronto.
Yeah.
So we're going to see them very soon. We'll see.
T-Dot.
And then, let's see, anything else to announce as far as that goes?
Well, we've still got, tickets are on sale for our Milwaukee show.
Yep.
You can find those online. We're about to announce a large run of shows for the summer.
A slew
of shows for the summer and the fall. That's going to be coming here in probably a week or so. And we're going to be coming to a lot of places that people have been wanting us to come to for a long time. We cannot wait.
Absolutely. And, of course, that's only been possible because of everyone who donated to the Patreon page.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you all so much for that.
Yep. And if you feel like we deserve a little bit of cash, you can go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. If you give just a dollar or more, then you can get advanced ticket sales to all those upcoming shows we just talked about.
Yeah, and I just read a couple of creepypastas, so make sure to go and give those a listen and harshly criticize me.
You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Henry Loves You, and Marcus Sparks at Ben Kissel. You can follow us on Instagram. I'm at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Sparks at Ben Kissel. The number one, and you can follow us Last Podcast and Left on all the fucking various bullshit motherfucking things.
All right.
At LP on the Left. Yeah.
And of course, keep on supporting all the shows here on CCR Roundtable of Gentlemen, Abe Lincoln's Top Band for Everything Politics, Page 7, Movie Signs with the Mads, Wizard and the Bruiser, and what else am I missing? Sex and Other Human Activities,
yeah.
Everything. You know where everything. To find it.
And I also want to give a special thank you to Johnny Crowhand.
Yeah.
He gave us some wonderful jewelry in Colorado Springs that I haven't been able to properly thank him for yet. But thank you very much, Johnny Crowhand, for the wonderful hand necklace you made me.
Oh, well, that sounds like puppetry of the penis.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
It's beautiful. I wear it when I write.
Okay, hail yourselves,
hail
everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gabe.
Hail me.
And a magustalations.
Go to yourself and be good.